Committee. And our hearing today is on House Bill 5044. Dallas, do you want to...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, today we have the Treasurer of State's budget request. We have with us the Treasurer and his staff. Before you, there are a couple of documents, the standard legislative fiscal office analysis of the governor's recommended budget. And this is a copy of an audit report prepared by the Secretary of State that has to do with the Treasurer's general computer controls. There were some findings here that I believe the Treasurer has addressed. We have scheduled Treasury to come before the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee on Monday, April 2nd. April 5th? Okay, whatever, it's a Monday.
Okay.
I remember that.
Monday, April 2nd.
April 2nd? So
my anniversary is April 1st.
So he knows.
April Fool's Day. So we have it all on tape. It's okay. Got it all on video. I can run that video backwards and walk out of the house at 3:00.
I don't think so.
32 years later?
No, I don't think so.
Monday, April 2nd.
The Treasurer of State's budget request is principally all other funds. In fact, historically, it's been underfunded. This time, there's a little bit of general fund in the request, and that's a continuation from an emergency board action earlier this biennium to provide funding and one staff person to start the Oregon Qualified Tuition Savings Program. So we have scheduled this. If you look on the system, though, I believe it's the legislative information system, this is tentatively scheduled for 3 days. It may be a little quicker than that. That's all right.
Okay. Thank you, Dallas. Good morning, Mr. Treasurer. Good morning. You know, you've heard about our pig.
Madam Chair, I have money for you, but let me say this is not a bribe. This is just in case I slip. Yes, I'm prepared.
Okay, that's fine. People lots of times go sit there and look at it and think, what am I supposed to do with this pig? I can tell it's got money in it. Am I supposed to donate away? But it is for a very good cause.
And
the brainchild of Representative Butler.
And what is the cause, Madam Chair?
To the American Cancer Society.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randall Edwards. I'm the State Treasurer of Oregon. And with me is Linda Haglund, my deputy. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today to talk to you about the Treasury and the important financial services we provide the state of Oregon. I'd also like to take a few moments to share with you my vision for this office and, quite frankly, why I ran to be state treasurer. The treasurer is the financial leader for Oregon. The office has evolved over the years, and today I serve many more functions than that of a keeper of money. The treasurer's role includes being a financial officer, a policymaker, and a financial leader for the state. As a financial officer, I am the chief financial officer for Oregon, and as such, I'm entrusted to ensure the prudent and safe management and investment of billions of taxpayers' money, pensioners' money, school dollars, and local government funds. The treasurer issues all bonds for the state, manages the bond programs, and works to maintain the state's good credit rating. Our good credit rating saves taxpayers millions of dollars over time through lower interest rates. I also serve as a central banker for the state, providing critical banking services and functions to all state agencies. As I mentioned, I'm also a policymaker as a statewide elected official. Let me share with you an example of that, sitting on the land board with the governor and secretary of state. We make decisions about policies affecting the management of state lands throughout Oregon. We manage more than 2 million acres of state-owned land on behalf of the Common School Fund, which help fund schools across Oregon. How we manage these lands are not only part of our past and future heritage, but affect the lives of the people who make a living from them. I also am the chair of the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, which advises the governor and you, the legislature, on financial policies relating to the state debt and long-term capital financing of Oregon. Given the great interest this session in our bonding ability, I'm prepared to expand the scope of the commission to provide more policy recommendations on how state bonding capacity should be used. I will also explore how we can prudently use the capacity to benefit more Oregonians. And the last hat that I wear is providing financial leadership for the state. I think if you look back in the history of the state treasurer, one of the treasurers who really put a mark on this organization was then State Treasurer Bob Straub, who created the modern public pension fund, which today is not only at a historic level, but has been seen as a leader in the public pension world. He did this as a policy to create a better retirement for those who gave their lives to public service. I'd like to share with you a few of my ideas that I'm working on and pursuing to improve Oregon. Last session, we created Oregon's College Savings Plan, which I now manage. As you know, Oregon's economy continues to demand higher and higher levels of education. Projections show that 80% of the jobs being created today require at least a bachelor's degree, and yet college is becoming less and less affordable. Parents are doing backflips to finance their children's education, and as a parent of three young children, I can already foresee the backflips I'm going to be faced in about 10 years. Many families are terribly in debt today because they're sending their children to college and incurring enormous deficits to do so. This new college savings plan was created to help make college more affordable for Oregon families. And in the long run, that will pay off to the state by helping keep Oregon's workforce competitive. The plan is accessible and flexible. Accounts can be started as little as with $25 a month. And you can put up to $150,000 per account per person. The money is professionally managed by Strong Investments, a long-standing mutual fund company. Savings under the plan also has tax benefits. The first $2,000 saved each year can be deducted off your state taxable income. In fact, grandparents can also take that $2,000 deduction. And there are no taxes on the earnings under the plan.
Why did the treasurer look at me when he said that? Why didn't you look at the newest grandpa?
I know he knows.
Well, you know, that's one of the risks.
Yes, it is.
That was a general gaze.
Okay.
General gaze.
Representative Hayden. But thank you for that comment. There are no taxes on the earnings under the plan until they are withdrawn for college expenses. The savings can be used for technical schools, junior colleges, four-year colleges, as well as graduate school. It can be used for in-state and out-of-state universities, private or public schools, and it also covers room, board, and tuition. The response to this new college savings plan has been phenomenal already. Since we opened the first account January 2nd of this year, nearly 3,000 Oregonians have opened an account, and we now have over $5 million in deposits. As the chair of the board that manages this plan, I will build on that response and work with parents, grandparents, the financial community, and the business community to promote broad statewide participation in this program. Another area and passion of mine is school finance. And something I'm interested in working on with you, the legislature, is to help school districts meet their capital needs. School districts across Oregon are struggling to repair and upgrade old schools. In fact, I think last week's earthquake should be a reminder that school structure safety is a critical priority for the state. And school districts are struggling to build new schools in fast-growing districts. I believe we must step up and help these districts. I want to create a school capital fund to share in large capital costs incurred by school districts. When school districts ask their voters for a capital bond measure, the state should offer matching money only if the measure is passed locally. The cheapest and most prudent way for the state to do this would be for us to create a general obligation bond. By using the state's good credit rating and issuing general obligation bonds, we will save taxpayers millions of dollars in lower bond interest costs. In fact, the general obligation bond could also be used to finance the state's portion of OHSU's biomedical research expansion. I have introduced legislation to create this general obligation bond as well as a school capital fund and to help finance OHSU's biomedical research. I look forward to working with you on these two projects. I don't think anybody's ever run for this office and not talked about how we can use the financial horsepower of the state treasurer to invest in Oregon. I'm interested in creating more jobs and economic opportunities around the state. As chair of the Oregon Growth Account, which receives lottery funds, my treasury and the board put money to work in startup companies. And I'm working to ensure that we maximize those monies by attracting as many private funds to help us leverage new monies into Oregon companies. I'm also actively working on the Private Activity Bond Committee to provide low-cost financing for economic development projects like the Tillamook Dairy expansion in Boardman and to expand affordable housing in Oregon. Again, the Treasurer has a long history of providing critical financial leadership to Oregon, and I want to build on that tradition. The key themes of financial officer, policymaker, and financial leader have been part of the Treasury for many years.
If I might add here, this is where the formal testimony starts. They would have this information.
Yeah, if you want to follow my testimony, it's before you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This can be seen in our strategic planning process, which has been and continues to be the driving force in establishing our goals, which are reflected in this budget. The strategic planning process is used to drive changes, respond to our customers' demands, and achieve our organizational goals. In 1995, we embraced the Oregon Quality Award criteria for organizational improvement. The criteria, based upon the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, our holistic approach to attain performance excellence, and focused our efforts and resources into critical categories and key results we're attempting to achieve. In fact, Treasury was honored to receive the Oregon Quality Award in 1998, recognition of our efforts in the strategic planning and performance excellence. Our planning effort centers around strategic priorities, those key areas we believe will help us achieve the excellence described in our mission statement. And our mission statement is simple: to provide professional and prudent fiscal management and financial services with the highest degree of proficiency and accountability. Our strategic priorities include: provide financial leadership in the state, retain a high-quality workforce, be customer-driven, implement a world-class information systems structure, communicate and educate our customers, stakeholders, and partners about Treasury's programs, and continue our quality program. Treasury's clear understanding of the strategic priorities enable us to make significant progress towards achieving these goals. We have to. We are operating in an increasingly complex and changing financial environment, which demands flexibility, responsiveness, and innovation. We also understand the growing demand for government services to perform more like the private sector. Our strategic priorities respond to these market and political conditions facing us. Following our strategic priorities align Treasury services with our customers' needs, while allowing Treasury employees to provide superior customer service, ultimately saving money. Treasury is comprised of 5 operational divisions with a staff of 78. These divisions include debt management, finance, investment, information systems, and executive. As one of the largest financial institutions in Oregon, Treasury provides investment and commercial banking services critical to the financial infrastructure of state government in Oregon. And the chart off to my right outlines those relationships. On the left column, you have the customers, and on the right are our partnerships. And we could add at the bottom, on the left, we could add the public, and on the right, the college savings plan. Our responsibilities include managing more than $50 billion in assets, issuing all state debt, and processing state checks, deposits, and automated clearinghouse transactions. We also serve as an important financial information resource to the state. I'd like to just briefly go into a little more depth about the Treasury functions and how they serve Oregon. Treasury serves as the central bank for state agencies. Each year, Treasury receives and disperses billions of dollars for all state agencies and local governments. Last year alone, $112 billion in transactions passed through the Treasury. 112. Over the next 2 years, we expect to process more than 17 million state checks and deposits and approximately 5 million in electronic payments. In its capacity as the state central bank, Treasury is also responsible for providing secure and cost-effective access to commercial electronic payment networks, through the State Treasury Automated Clearinghouse Network, providing consulting services to state agencies to assist them in becoming more efficient and more effective in their cash management practices, ensuring the safety of public funds deposited in financial institutions across the state through our collateral pool program. Treasury covers the cost of these services by billing monthly. We continually work with the financial institutions to get the best rate possible for the services needed by the state of Oregon. And if you turn to the chart to my right, which illustrates these cost savings. If each agency were out banking separately from us, they would pay an estimated $3.5 million a biennium more in banking service charges, as illustrated on the top chart there, top bar chart. Further, if you look at the lower chart, the state would lose millions of dollars in income currently earned through the Oregon Short-Term Fund because of our superior rates of return and lower costs. Another area of the Treasury is being an investment banker. The Treasury is known as one of the leading financial institutions nationally. Our long record of high investment returns has been impressive and make us one of the top performing investment managers in the country, both public or private. Our success in investing money has grown the assets we manage now over $50 billion. The largest account is the Public Employment Retirement Fund at $40 billion. It is the 28th largest pension fund in the country, public or private. Some of the other major investment funds for which we are responsible include the State Accident Insurance Fund at $2.5 billion, the Oregon Short-Term Fund at $7 billion, the Common School Fund at $783 million, and the Veterans Welfare Fund at $334 million. Treasury, by statutory direction, is required to invest all of these assets according to the highest level of fiduciary care and responsibility, the prudent investor rule. These standards, established by the same organization that drafts the Uniform Commercial Code, is considered the highest bar of responsibility, duty, and loyalty of a fiduciary in investment management. Treasury has many roles as a state investment banker and is a model in private-public partnerships. We have over 150 relationships with various investment managers, consultants, banks, and partnerships. These relationships help utilize the private sector's expertise and are driven by the need to diversify the $50 billion portfolio we manage. We do actively manage two portfolios in-house with $13 billion, our fixed income asset portfolio and the Oregon Short-Term Fund. The Short-Term Fund is our direct link to helping local governments and taxpayers. This fund provides the attractive return of a professionally managed money market fund at a fraction of the cost. Public entities across Oregon entrust us with investing this fund worth $4 billion. There are more than 1,500 accounts with the fund, from Multnomah County to the Harney Soil and Conservation District, and from the City of Eugene to the City of Maupin. These accounts represent customers from all over the state and all levels of investor expertise. This program has a cap on the amount of money a municipality may place with us, and that cap is currently at $35 million. A further responsibility of the Treasury is to serve as a staff to the Oregon Short-Term Fund Board. The board is an advisory board created by statute to review investment policies for local governments and provides guidance to Treasury as we serve the needs of local governments. Active management and monitoring of all of our relationships and portfolios has produced very favorable historic rates of return. Treasury must ensure it is able to proactively continue seeking new investment opportunities. Not doing so would place the portfolio returns at risk. While Treasury can and does seek the services of others in the management of these assets, as a fiduciary, we can never, never delegate the ultimate responsibility of these monies. Inadequate monitoring and due diligence would expose the portfolios and the state to unacceptable levels of risk. Since the 1960s, when Treasury managed $200 million, to the current $50 billion, the portfolios have become much more complex. The diversification has led to both increased returns and moderation of risks to return. We have benefited from not having all of our eggs in any one basket. And I also want to point out we are not market timers and that we invest for the long term. We recover our costs of providing these investment banking services by charging a fee based on the assets under management, just as a private investment bank would. I'd also like to point out that we are moving, that if we were to move our investing to external management firms, the total biannual cost for external fees would be approximately $100, as seen by this chart. To put this in perspective, we are requesting $12 million, or less than 12% of the cost of managing these funds externally. As I stated earlier, we are the issuer of Allstate bonds, ensuring the prudent and safe management of debt by receiving the lowest possible interest rate, saving taxpayers' money. We work closely with the Department of Administrative Services and all bonding agencies. The chart before you is an illustration of our management function, reflecting how the state's general obligation bonds have decreased over the years. This decrease is due in large part to Treasury's leadership in restructuring the Veterans Home Loan Program in the late 1980s, resulting in debt capacity once again becoming available to make long-term strategic infrastructure investments. We manage Oregon's debt capacity by coordinating the sale and issuance of all state debt. This saves the state money and time. And we are constantly looking for innovations. Last year, in fact, we conducted our first bond sale ever over the Internet, again saving money. We actively work with bond rating agencies, institutional and individual bondholders to ensure Oregon's outstanding bonds are viewed positively in the secondary market. Additionally, we perform a great many debt financing services. We provide bonding assistance and information to local governments. We monitor economic and financial events and assess their impact on the state's finances and the state's bond rating. We provide staffing to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission, the Private Activity Bond Committee, and the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission. We proactively review the feasibility of bond refunding, like you would in refinancing your house when interest rates become lower, for an opportunity to save money. We comply with federal securities law and federal tax law when issuing and maintaining state tax-exempt bonds. And the bonds we issue help provide critical investments in the state's infrastructure. We also manage the State School Bond Guarantee Act, which reduces interest costs for Oregon schools and saves property taxpayers money, millions of taxpayers' money. This constitutionally mandate allows the state to guarantee bonds of eligible school districts, educational service districts, and community colleges. The program allows districts to have their bonds rated based on the state's better credit rating. As pointed out in this chart, the program is saving property taxpayers approximately $100 million over the next 20 years. And since coming to office, I've been able to expand the capacity of this program, which will even save more money. As I mentioned, I am the chair of the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, which advises the governor and you about needed policies and actions to preserve and enhance the state's credit rating and maintain future low-cost capital financing. The commission provides a report detailing a 6-year forecast of Oregon's debt capacity, which is a strategic tool to ensure that the state's debt is issued in the most efficient manner possible to carry out state mandates. I'm looking forward to expand the commission's scope to provide more policy recommendations on how to better utilize the state's bond capacity. Now that you understand this Treasury's functions, let me provide a general overview of my budget. The budget before you allows us to continue the good work on behalf of Oregonians. As you recall, we are a fee-for-service organization. We make our money by charging our clients for our services. As such, over 99% of our budget is other funds. We are requesting a one-time option package, which is a small general fund loan to be repaid within 5 years to cover the startup costs of the Oregon College Savings Program. We operate very efficiently with only 78 employees, managing a $50 billion portfolio, issuing all state debt, and performing critical banking functions for all state agencies. Our limited budget request before you today totals $18.1 million. To put our budget into perspective, as you can see by this chart shows our estimated 2001 annual budget in relation to our investment returns. As you can see, the Treasury's budget is only a sliver compared to our returns. Treasury's limited current service level budget of $18.1 million is a 6.7% increase from last year's legislatively approved budget. This includes personnel service adjustments, increases for inflation, and adjustments for state government service charges. At the current service level, our budget continues all of Treasury's vital programs. Specifically, this budget continues the Treasury's fiduciary responsibility to fund beneficiaries and our ability to save taxpayers' money by earning the highest risk-adjusted return possible on investments, as mandated by the legislature and the Oregon Investment Council. It strengthens the state's financial infrastructure and allows Treasury to continue to perform necessary financial services for state agencies and local governments. It continues to develop strategies to improve the state's credit rating, which will save taxpayers' dollars by lowering the interest costs on borrowed money. It continues the efficient management and issuance of state debt and provides valuable information to local governments, to local government debt issuers. It continues the constitutionally mandated school bond guarantee program, which reduced debt costs for schools, saving, again, school districts and taxpayers' money. We'll also continue to provide outstanding service to all Treasury customers, including you, the legislature, state agencies, local governments, and school districts. And it leverages the investment in technology from our recent computer migration to enable staff to perform more value-added services for our customers through a secure and flexible network environment. As I mentioned, in addition to our current service level budget, our total request includes one program option package. Treasury is requesting $270,000 to continue a one-time full position approved by the September 2000 Emergency Board for the Oregon College Savings Program. We are requesting this general fund loan to be repaid within 5 years to cover the startup costs of this program. This minimal loan will be repaid through a very small administrative charge against plan assets. This program is proving to be very popular, and this loan will enable the Treasury to continue to build on its early success. Madam Chair, in closing, I'm really honored to be here as Oregon's 26th State Treasurer. The Treasury has a long tradition of providing financial leadership for Oregon, and I'm here to ask for your support to build on that legacy. The Treasury is an agency we all can be proud of. Thank you for your consideration today, and be happy to answer any questions you may have about our budget or the office. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I'm going to go to Representative Johnson and Representative Butler. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. A couple of questions. You mentioned that the Treasury acts as a bank, a central bank for all state agencies. Are there agencies that, in your knowledge, are carrying large amounts of cash that are not dealing with Treasury for investment or for cash management?
And are banking outside of us or just carrying a lot of cash?
Either one.
Correct. The short term would all be in-house. Agencies that would be holding cash would be, for example, housing, and those would be a little bit longer term or more structured type of investments.
Linda, can you identify yourself?
I'm sorry. For the record, Linda Haglund, Deputy State Treasurer.
A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Give me an idea of what you would consider as the state central banker appropriate levels of cash for agencies to be carrying. In short term.
Madam Chair, why don't I have the head of the finance division answer specifically how we view cash management in the state.
And that's really what I'm going after, not the specifics of, you know, who's got what, but it just a flavor of cash management.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the State Treasury. All agencies' cash is actively invested. They don't have cash that sits in banks fund invested. We manage actively all of the cash through the Oregon Short-Term Fund, which has a balance somewhere between $7 and $8 billion, depending on agency and local government activity. We do have some agencies that do manage an investment portfolio outside of the state treasury, and typically that's all related to debt issues. Housing is an instance with their revenue bond program, where they're investing and investing through trustees pursuant to the bond documents that describe how it is. But for, except for programs like that, all money is invested through the state treasury.
One last follow-up move. Could you describe the relationship with the trustees? Who are these people? How are they selected? Is there a process to identify them?
That, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, that's a debt issuance, a debt issuance question, where the agencies, through the process of issuing their debt, go through a selection process to determine who the trustees will be, and through the process of working with counsel, financial advisors, and treasury, define the parameters that the funds that they are receiving will be invested.
One last question, Manager.
Jim Johnson.
When you say define the parameters, how subjective is that selection process? Or is are the trustees' contracts renewed periodically? Forgive me for asking these questions. These are freshman questions, I'm afraid, but I'm just curious how those relationships are refreshed or monitored, if not done by the state central banker, which is Treasury.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, the way we do that is we put out an RFP. There's largely a competitive bidding process. We look for the lowest cost to the state agency. So it is a competitive market process by which we select a trustee to issue those debt.
And then those RFPs are periodically issued, so they refresh the trustee pool?
Yep.
And
every debt issuance, I believe there's an RFP process.
Could there be a scenario by which one trustee would be involved with portfolio management for extended periods of time, or are they sufficiently refreshed that there's a pretty good turnover and it's a highly competitive situation?
You spoke to it at the end there. It's highly competitive, and it's changed. And depending on, you know, again, every debt issuance that we make, we will find a new trustee or we'll put an RFP out. So we have a good mix of people marketing these bonds in the marketplace at a low cost.
Okay. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to continue on with one of the questions that I think that Representative Johnson was trying to get to. Treasurer Edwards, you have a slide that shows that the cost to run the Treasurer's office through outside providers would be $100 million, and it's costing the folks in the state of Oregon today to have the Treasurer run it $12 million. So I guess we could go ahead and assume, based upon that, that internal fees versus external fees would be about 12%. Why in that instance, in this scenario, are not all of the funds run of the entire state run through the Treasurer's office? Is there some disconnect or some appearance of impropriety or lack of independence? What's the reason that the Treasurer's office doesn't control all of this with an 88% efficiency rating?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, maybe what I could do is bring up Darren Bond again to talk about the tradition of this this relationship. You know, cash management is clearly something we do for the state agencies, and I don't know if I could speculate on it may be just a historical relationship that we have.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, again, I'm Darren Bond. The investment of debt-related funds, like in housing, is very much tied to the program and the program's use of the funds, the accounting for the funds. It's really a quite administratively burdensome process. For us to be able to undertake that kind of a role would require establishing a type of program-specific review that we don't do now. We don't invest for, through the Oregon Short-Term Fund particularly, which is where we deal with the bulk of agency money like this. We don't invest for specific agency-related cash flow needs because we're investing such a large sum of money for local governments and for the state. We have necessarily a huge amount of liquidity there to be able to provide that. But when you're talking about bond funds, there's a number of issues that come into play, and a lot of the issue is managing the yield on those instruments because of the fact that they're issuing tax-exempt debt. Should the return they get be too much, they end up having to rebate that money back to the federal government anyway. So it's not necessarily that they're leaving money on the table. They're probably not. In most cases, for instance, housing, I believe, is in a positive arbitrage environment, so they are having to pay the feds back excess income. And for us to make them more money, should we be able to, and I'm not convinced necessarily that we can, then we would have to, they would just be paying back more money to the federal government. And again, and part of our issue would be that we would have significantly greater administrative costs that we would expect to incur. So the cost to a debt issuing agency for us to take on that same role would increase. And additionally, a lot of the agency costs relative to all of that program accounting are still going to have to be there. So in some sense, there would be some duplicative costs.
Madam Chair, follow-up on that to Mr. Bond. While we have Mr. Bond here, I think maybe we better get to the bottom of this because either we can't do it because of statute or we can't do it because of capacity, and I think capacity is there. We can't do it because of inefficiency, and that isn't the case. The reason we can't do it is because we would duplicate staff that they must have and we must have. I can't hardly believe that we can't somehow legislate some efficiency into that process. And we can't do it because we would turn around and have to pay a portion of the excess earnings back to the federal government. Well, heaven forbid that we became efficient and had to reduce. We're all taxpayers. I checked my W-2 and they're withholding from me on federal, so I still pay federal tax. So isn't there a way that we could become more efficient in this process and have that folded under the Treasury's responsibilities?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, there may be. I think that the it's hard for me to speak directly to that because I'm not.
Chuck wants to.
Okay, that's good. I'd be much more comfortable if Chuck would.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chuck Smith. I'm a Director of Debt Management for the Oregon State Treasury. Maybe I could just back up a moment and sort of to try to put some bonding in practice, some bonding cash management in practice, and sort of weave in IRS rules to with respect to bond proceeds and the limits on the investments we can make. Bonds generally divided up into sort of broad categories. A lot of times we take a look at general obligation bonds, revenue bonds, that sort of thing. Those are one category. But you could also divide them up into another couple categories called trusteed and non-trusteed bonds. Non-trusteed bonds are generally our general obligation bond programs. Trusteed bonds are our revenue bond programs. As revenue bonds, these bonds are secured by a single source or a single area of revenue. They're not secured by the full faith and credit of the state. Therefore, revenue bonds, you have to go to an extra step to protect the bondholders. And one of the protections that bondholders insist upon in revenue bonds are trustees. A trustee acts on behalf of the bondholders. A trustee collects monies. And if ever need be, the trustee would enforce all the legal remedies against the state to make the state pay its revenue bonds from the source that's been pledged to repay those bonds.
Okay, so we're using a fiduciary, and the question is, how much do we pay the outside fiduciary to be the trustee? And number one, at 88% efficiency in the treasurer's office, I got to believe that a trustee isn't going to cost you the other 88% of what it would cost us to use the outside. Is the state of Oregon... I don't want to ask if we can become a bank because, in effect, I don't want to do business as a bank, but I still believe that there's a lot of what And we're aiming, the questions are aimed at one right now, question relative to other bonds, the revenue bonds for housing or those kinds of things. Chuck, is there a way that we can make this process, this whole process with the outside trustee, much more efficient by using the treasurer's office?
Well, first of all, the outside trustee is required, period.
Okay, can we make that, okay, can we make it more efficient by using a trustee, or do we have to use someone else's trustee?
Trustees have to be outside third parties. The state can't be trustees.
A fiduciary office of some sort.
Okay, and they're selected through the RFP process, so there's a competitive process established. Trustees are picked through an RFP process. They're picked on a combination of things, their ability to handle the kind of transactions involved, their expertise with those kind of bond areas, as well as their low cost. So it's a competitive, active process. The trustee business has been very active and very competitive. There's been a lot of consolidation in the trustee business over the last 8 or 10 years because of competition. And those folks that don't have the base, the efficiencies, the computer-driven programs to handle trustees have been folded into the larger kind of organization.
But, Madam Chairman, I think we're nibbling around the edges of it, and I'd like to take a bite out of it in just a moment. But, Chuck, in the treasurer's office, we issue these revenue bonds as well through a trustee. Are we using the same trustee?
Yeah, it's
throughout the entire state. Is there just one trustee on the outside?
No, Representative Butler, there's a number of trustees for various programs, and they've all been selected on a competitive RFP basis. And when we issue bonds for housing, we're talking about the same trustee that's been selected on an RFP basis for housing that the treasurer has approved. So we're looking for the most efficient folks. But one, the trustees required, it's an RFP process. And also, we talked about, Darren was mentioning the integration of a program with a trustee and their investment function of the trustee as directed by program officials. This is really important in, for instance, housing, which is probably the largest, most complex kind of cash organization that we have in the state. All of the money there is invested either, one, with the treasurer through their bigger elderly housing GO programs, or two, through trustees through revenue bond programs. There's day-to-day activities, there's disbursement for loans, there's loan payments, there's funds flowing on a continuous basis that requires staff, computers, tracking, et cetera, to make sure this is, efficiently sort of connected with their organization. They do thousands of small transactions. The Treasury, with respect to its investment function, is built up to pool monies and do large-scale transactions. One area I'd like to also mention is IRS rule on bonds. The IRS, essentially, the IRS says you can't arbitrage bonds. What that means is you can't sell tax-exempt bonds at a low interest rate and turn around and invest the money at a high interest rate or higher rate in treasuries or some other kind of investment and keep the profits over the long haul. There are very short-term, very technical periods, small periods, you can do that. But for the long term, that is a good, fair statement. And it says if you do invest monies that exceed your bond yield over the long term, you rebate that to the Treasury, United States Treasury, not the Oregon State Treasury. So we've got arbitrage restrictions. They're extraordinarily complex. They must be complied with on every single bond sale that the state of Oregon does. These kind of calculations and everything are centered within the agencies. They're reported to the state's controller. The state's controller reports to us that each agency each year has complied with the rules with respect to calculating their arbitrage.
Go back to the trustee, Chuck. Is this a Supreme Court appointment that once they're there for life, or is this continually run out on the request for qualifications or request for proposal?
Requests for proposals are periodically renewed, and we change trustees, and we have in the past, and we will in the future, depending on their competitive position and the rates they're offering to do the business for the state.
And the oversight that we have over the trustees that come in under this process,
The oversight, the state treasurer approves the appointment of all state trustees, all trustees for state bonds. They periodically review, their performance is reviewed.
And I recognize that the arbitrage and the alternative minimum tax issues are severe issues. And I guess I got a little bit, critical when, you know, heaven forbid we have to turn some money back. But that the worst thing that happens isn't the fact that we turn it back to the General Treasury of the United States. The worst thing is that you put at risk the AMT provisions, the alternative minimum tax provisions of your bond. The RFP process, too, goes in there as well, Treasury. So,
I'm putting money in for you, too.
Okay. Thank you. But I guess the concern that I have is that if we have to have an outside fiduciary that does this for us, I am not convinced that we are. I haven't heard testimony today that we have sufficient control over that third party, other than just the process that gives me the degree of satisfaction that this person accounts back to the treasurer on a regular enough basis, and that we have the control over that trustee. And I recognize that there's got to be a separation of the treasurer and the trustee, that there's got to be two people, one to make sure that the few people get the payment that the treasurer authorizes, but I'm still not convinced that we're getting the best deal on the outside when the treasurer runs at 88% better efficiency than on the outside.
Well, Representative Butler, speaking to the, if I could just back up and speak to your comments about the trustee, when the state appoints a trustee, we enter into a trust agreement. This trust agreement is reviewed by the Attorney General as well as bond counsel. And it lays out the responsibilities of the trustee as well as the responsibilities of the state in great detail. So we have a legal binding agreement on what the trustee is supposed to do and what the state is supposed to do. And they're held to this kind of legal agreement. So the RFP process is a start. It's not a completion. The trust agreements, which are very lengthy documents, lay out each side's roles and responsibilities, and that's what governs. It's a legal relationship that governs this kind of relationship.
Different issue. As we move into the Oregon Qualified Tuition Savings Program, we've also gone through the same RFP process, I guess, to the outside, relative to finding a trustee on the outside there. And that was done through the same program. We've got a $130,000 loan that was approved in September. We're now looking at another $271,000 loan. I appreciate the fact these may be loans, but this is money that goes outside the Treasury as well to a third party.
Madam Chair, Linda Hagman again, Representative Butler. The tuition savings program is actually, if you can divide it into two parts, there's the administration of the plan, which is what the loan and the funds that we have currently in our budget pertain to. Additionally, there is a service provider, and in the case of the tuition program, that's Strong Investments, and they are the group that actually invests the funds and has the infrastructure for the accounting and record keeping of all the participants in the program.
And you don't have that capacity, or you must use an outside provider?
We do not have the capacity, and I can speak that that's an area we do not want to venture into. Treasury also, in the investment division, has oversight responsibility for the state's deferred compensation plan, which is an IRS 457 sanctioned plan, and it has approximately 14,000 participants in it, and the kind of technology and resources that are required to have a robust service-oriented plan, we could not do that internally at the same rate we can buy that service externally. And it would be the same thing with the tuition program.
So, Madam Chairman, there are certain functions that the treasurer's office is abundantly efficient at, that we can be at 88% savings, but other areas that are so specialized that we have to go ahead and, I say we have to, we need to go ahead and allow that to be done in the market through the strong funds for this particular IRS Section 457 plan.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Butler. The strong plan is actually the tuition program. The other program I was using as a comparison is the state's deferred compensation plan that's offered to state employees. If I might say, Treasury, in all of our programs, is always looking for public-private partnerships, and where we can get the biggest bang for our buck, if you will, we will look to external sources. The industry that we work in, fundamentally the investment industry, changes so rapidly that many times we can leverage that change at the, on the external source by having the flexibility to change vendors through the request for proposal processes and review processes. If we had those systems internally, we'd be, you know, having those legacy systems and then having to replace them. So many times that outside view actually does give us better service at a lower cost.
And Chair, let me express to the committee a concern that I have and why I've been nibbling around with this, and perhaps Representative Johnson has some concerns as well, as he could much better articulate than could I. One of the concerns I have is that once we establish this outside relationship with a third party, it becomes absolutely imperative that they be a high quality, and I have no concern about the quality of the strong funds or who our trustees are on any of these bonds at this point. I have no reason to believe that they're less than the quality that we should have. The concern that I've got is that what happens when the marketplace isn't quite as competitive with regard to the fund rate that we're being charged, as the dynamics of the market change very rapidly, and what latitude we have within the Treasury or what action we take to make sure that we are absolutely competitive. Now, I don't in any way want to cast any dispersions upon the Treasurer or any of the staff, nor any of the methods by which we've been doing this in the past. The concern that I have is that this is a very dynamic and fast-moving market, and because of that, we may get ourselves into some issues that we may not be able to call back quite rapid enough. And if the strong set of funds became less than the best place to put this qualified tuition plan, savings plan that Oregon has, if it became less than the best place to have it, how quickly would we, number one, know, and I have confidence that the Treasurer's Office has enough really good people that they would know very rapidly, and then number two, how quickly do our legal documents and our statutory authorizations allow us to make the jump or blow the whistle to say everybody out of the pool. And I'm very concerned about these long-term, what appear to be lifelong relationships. And I really don't know. I would like to have the plan as to how we're going to repay the $130,000 from last e-board and how we'll plan to repay the $271,000. And what, you know, as to how this is repaid over the start above the startup costs, and then I'd like to have some further discussion as to how statutorily we could make sure that these funds are protected very rapidly, that the Treasurer has enough ability to move in and very rapidly modify, and I'm not going to suggest that we modify a contractual arrangement with regard to existing trustees, but with each and every bond issue, are the same trustees the ones that are, how many trustees do we have? Do we have a favored few, or is the same company or group of companies presenting the necessary RFPs each time, and we continue to select the same folks? And those are some of the concerns that I have relative to the outside arrangements. Again, I recognize that the fiduciary arrangement, which must be established relative to a trustee, no different than paying off a deed and having someone else record it for you, as a fiduciary, as a receiving agent, if you will. We'll hear real estate at another time today, but that's the kind of relationship that we've got to establish. Well, I have 100% confidence in the prior 25 treasurers and this treasurer to make those kinds of calls. My concern is, does the treasurer and the treasurer staff feel like that we've got sufficient statutory ability to make sure that if we're not feeling as comfortable as we should, that we can make the jump very rapidly?
Does anyone want to respond to that?
Well, let me just respond in general, and maybe some of the specifics, if you want to take the time to go through some of those statements. Let me just say about the college savings plan specifically. It is an at-will contract that we can terminate at any time. But let me go, which ties me to the larger point. And
excuse me, let me just follow up that at-will, and then the strong funds would divest themselves of 100% of all of the monies,
yep,
that are in that. And then we need to have someone else to take them over. Is that lost to the at that point?
Well, we would make it seamless as possible. We'd go out and do an RFP. RFP, go find another vendor and then move it in. It's a 5-year contract we have with them right now, and I think that speaks to the fact that it goes to something I said earlier. We are not market timers.
Right.
You and I can sit here and talk about when we should be pulling the plug or not, and I think sometimes that can be a dangerous game. What we're trying to do is with this program at least, make sure we have somewhat of a track record. Strong has a great reputation of providing good services, but we're monitoring that, and it's a new program for them, it's a new program for us, and so we're going to kind of feel our way through this, but we're going to make sure, my assurance is that we're going to make sure we have the best rates of return possible with these funds that they're being offered to the taxpayers of Oregon.
We'll give you some sort of a report, excuse me, I'm sure. We'll
yes.
give you some sort of an interim report that's
yes.
available
yes.
so that you can give some level of comfort back to the legislature that we are performing very well in relationship to the balance of the market, and that the funds are being protected and augmented and built up the way that they should be.
Yes. Okay. We have a reporting mechanism for that program, as almost all of our programs have some reporting back to you.
Treasurer, if you'll hold your thoughts
sure.
and continue, we take a 5-minute break.
Yeah, right now.
Thank you.